On a sunny day in early September, hundreds of Wheeling residents, state lawmakers, and the pride of West Virginia, West Virginia University's marching band, all came out to Main Street in Wheeling to celebrate an important milestone in the city's history, 250 years. James Fry headed up Wheeling's 250th commission.
We're a small town that doesn't know we're a small town, because in my lifetime, there were upwards of 60,000 people in this area. And yes, we've shrunk a bit, but we have many of the attributes remaining from the 19th and the 20th centuries that make us feel bigger than we are.
The parade wasn't the only event that the city put together. There was also a costume ball at the beginning of the year, a fireworks display to celebrate 170 years since the construction of the Wheeling Suspension Bridge, and other events meant to remember a storied past. One of those events was reliving a radio speech given by Harry H. Jones in 1936. Jones was Wheeling's only practicing African-American lawyer at the time. The speech, which dealt with the systematic racial inequalities faced by the black community at the time, was read by the Wheeling YWCA's Cultural and Diversity Outreach Director, Ron Scott.
Ladies and gentlemen, about one out of every 20 persons living in Wheeling is of African descent. This 20th man is not a newcomer nor an alien, for his ancestors were settled by force in Virginia 1 year before the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock. No serious biracial clash has ever taken place in this city's history, due largely to the liberal attitude of the whites and the splendid conduct of the colored people. But justice and candor require attention to the handicaps suffered by Wheeling's 20th man.
Wheeling is half the size it was in its industrial heyday, but like many towns that sprung up during early white settlement, it had a modest beginning. Wheeling historian Travis Henline explains.
Wheeling, at the time it was founded, was nothing but a frontier outpost. I mean, you had just a few families who were settled here, like the Zanes and the McCulloughs, and a few others.
This first settlement happened in 1769 and was named Zanesburg after one of the founding families. A century later, Wheeling would experience a boom during the Industrial Revolution because of its prime location on the Ohio River.
So now you have the Ohio River, the major conduit for thousands of years for people, comes together with the National Road, which brings people by wagon and foot across the mountains to the Ohio River. And then you have the Beano Railroad, which connects us to the Chesapeake Bay and the Atlantic. So all those together make us a gateway to the West and a transportation hub. I mean, it's a huge part of our history.
The B&O Railroad finished construction in 1853, 10 years before West Virginia became a state, which the city of Wheeling had a hugely important role in. Again, Travis Henline.
Well, without Wheeling, there would be no West Virginia. Because we are strategically located in the Northern Panhandle, when the conflict of the Civil War began, we were here in the comfy confines of this strip of land between two very powerful Union states in Ohio and Pennsylvania.
This location made Wheeling the prime location for the capital of the reformed government of Virginia after the state seceded from the Union in 1861. After 2 years, Wheeling would become the birthplace and capital of the then-new state of West Virginia, making it the only city to have been the capital of two different states. While Wheeling didn't remain the capital of the state, it was still an economic powerhouse, earning the nickname Nail City because of the amount of iron manufacturing in it. But all things must come to an end, and Wheeling's economic boom is no different.
So we in the 60s and 70s and into the 80s, that's when you see a lot of the industry is closing down. It's moving out. You had the interstate comes through. You have the retail centers in the 70s, the Ohio Valley Mall, later on the Highlands that kind of kill some of the commercial things happening in downtown Wheeling. And so you start to see people, I mean, some of the jobs leave, so the people leave.
Many of the industries that became synonymous with Wheeling, like Wheeling Steel or Marsh Wheeling Stogies, had either moved or completely closed their doors by the 2000s. This led to a pretty bleak reputation for the city. But as current mayor of Wheeling, Glenn Elliott, points out, there are still some victories in recent years worth celebrating.
One of the issues we have with downtown is that people judge our current downtown to what it was in 1950 when it was a retail hub. If you look at cities up and down the Rust Belt, downtowns are no longer the retail hubs they once were. All that's moved out to malls and shopping plazas in the suburban areas. But if you look at the actual employment numbers, downtown Wheeling is booming in terms of the number of people we have working there each and every day. You just don't see many of them because they're actually sitting at their desks or the cubicles or workstations.
While the celebration mainly focused on one-off events, there were a few items the Wheeling 250 Commission wanted to leave behind. These leave-behind items included a new flag for the city, a set of murals commemorating the river, the rails, and the road that made Wheeling a transportation hub, and a children's book. Published this month, the book Once There Was a Mouse is written by Wheeling resident Cheryl Ryan Harshman and illustrated by celebrated Wheeling artist Robert Villamagna. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Corey Nollinger in Wheeling.